I play at the Y quite a bit, and I don't like old guys, especially when it comes to sports. I like the Y because it doesn't cost a lot of dough, but the old people always over there want to play on your team. And I don't like them on my basketball team. They're the last guys down on the fast break. They forget your name a lot. They're just no fun. I mean, they go half court and then they stop. And they want a halftime after they get a rebound. And they shoot and grab the side and all things like that. I just don't care for them. This one time I was playing handball. We have four-wall court in the Y. And I love to play in the Y, mainly because they don't allow any cursing. You'd be surprised how that speeds the game up. And I was playing some handball just by myself, waiting for some young guys to come, you know. And this old man came on my court. So old, he had on the original Y uniform with the Hebrew letter Y on his shirt.
How about a game?
You gotta be nice to old people. They ain't gonna be here too long or nothing like that. So you be nice to them. You say, okay, Pop, go ahead. Here you are. We'll play, just you and I. You go ahead and serve. And I showed them to the line. And Pop, you know, his old gloves with hair on them and everything. And he served. And I went back and let one go about half speed. This old man don't want to give him a cardiac arrest or nothing. I let one go. And he just looked and saw it hit on the front wall, didn't pay any attention to it, and walked over to a spot. And just where he stopped, that's where the ball bounced. Didn't even move his arm. Just hit it with his wrist. This far from the floor. Looked around at me and said, 1-0. So I just said, serve the ball, let's serve the ball. So now I figure this time I'm gonna let Dad know who's boss on this court. No more halfways or nothing like that. I'm gonna cut one on him. I don't care where he goes after this shot. I'm not responsible for him. And he served. And I went back and grabbed it and let one go up in the ceiling. Old man just walked to a spot. Didn't even move his arm. Just... Two, nothing. I didn't count. Just served the damn ball. No cursing in the Y. Beat me 21-3. 70, 90-year-old man beat me 21-3. Never even broke sweat.
We got one TV set in this house. One TV set. That's all my wife would allow. I said, okay, we will get rid of the 11 other sets. No, I had TV set everywhere, in the toilet, every place, man. I just watch games and everything, you know. But now we have one set. You have to go all the way down to the basement to watch it. Now, I'm going to show you how you can be intimidated by a child. I'm watching Gunsmoke and enjoying it.
Marshal Dillon, I'll rip your nose off if you try to lay.
Because they don't shoot, you know.
I'll tear your liver out.
Erica, the 7-year-old, comes up and says, they don't start with a word. It's always,
can I? Could I watch Froofy the dog?
No, I'm watching Gunsmoke.
Now that's enough. The father has spoken. No, I'm watching Gunsmoke.
Now, to a grown-up, to a dog, to a German Shepherd coming up,
could I watch Foofy the dog?
No, I'm watching Gunsmoke. The dog would say, okay,
all right.
But not a 7-year-old human being.
Well, how long is this going to be on?
Until 7:30.
Well, that's the same time that Froofy the dog goes off.
Tough.
I was here. Now I find myself arguing with somebody that I should just be able to say, get out of here. I am the father. See, I have shown my credentials now. Now go on, Erica, get out of here. I'm watching Gunsmoke.
But, Aaron and I wanted to watch Froofy the dog.
You're not watching Froofy the dog because he's dead. Now, go play.
Now, Slicko, man, I think it's all over. She goes to her mother. This is called playing one against the other. They learn this automatically. They don't go to school. There's no class for this. Automatically, there's somebody behind them.
Go talk to Mom.
Mother.
Now, my wife is cooking. She don't want to be bothered. And that's good timing. Always grab the parent when they're busy doing something. They'll say yes for anything. Especially if they're cooking a cake or something like that. Something's got time. Erica, what is it? I don't have time for...
Daddy won't let us watch our Froofy the dog.
Well, if Daddy's watching something, then he must watch what he wants to watch.
But he wanted Aaron and me to watch Gunsmoke, and the men on Gunsmoke are drowning some little baby kittens. Now I'm watching through the dog.
At a man who happens to be an individual who believes in not letting himself get hurt. Let me give you an example. Whoever is going to kill me is going to have a difficult time doing it. First of all, I am not one of these people. If I was in a pirate ship and they said walk the plank, no way they're going to get me to walk the edge of some plank and walk out and die. See, because my psychic says you're going to die anyway. Take somebody with you. Like if I was going to the electric chair, you better believe there would be somebody sitting on top of me in that chair. I'm not letting go. If a guy had a gun and was going to shoot me, I will put my finger in the hole. I'm gonna give him this. And who knows, maybe a bullet does need a running start. It might peter out right before it gets to your fingers. You know, you never know. If a plane is going to crash, I don't want the pilot sneaking no crash on me. Tell me that the plane is going down. Tell me, come back. If you don't want to panic the passengers, I can understand you don't want to see people in a plane wreck all, you know, horrified looks. You want them peaceful. But come and tell me. I told the captain that, and I tell every captain that I fly with, Captain, let me know if we're going to crash. Come back, you know, whisper it, you know.
Mr. Cosby, yes, we are crashing at this time.
Thank you, because I got something I want to try. I will be out on the wing, flapping my arms, man. Now, you can laugh if you want, but if I take off, and I tell you, I mean, it's like with an elevator, man. If that thing ever breaks and the elevator starts falling, I got something I want to try.
6 inches before it hits the ground, I'm gonna jump up in the air. Now, it might not work. Might not work at all. You may see 8 bodies all crumpled up at the bottom and 1 head through the top. But they will say, man, he sure did try. It's like in horror pictures. People laugh at the black actor because he's sitting down and the monster comes through the door. And all of a sudden he said, feet, do your duty. And everybody says, oh, ah, 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 ah. He sure was funny. He ran out of it. You've never seen him get killed. Any Italians here?
Yeah, yeah. Right here.
Okay. If I say to you, Fernet Branca, what is it? Yeah, it does the job, but oh, how it tastes. Do you know how it helped me? I was in Italy, I was in Florence. There's a friend of mine, his name is Henry Silva. He was a Puerto Rican actor, he speaks just a little bit of Italian. If you're in Italy, they love you when you speak Italian, man. So that helped, you know, because we didn't want to go to the tourist places. They give you the same food that you get here, almost. You know, we want to go eat with the people. So we found a lot of restaurants around there, but everybody spoke Italian, you see. So Henry would come in, Ottonello, Elibini, Olibori, Ottonoli. And the guys would say, hey, Ottuello, Olibini, Celloini, Cinque, Hello, Dolce, Hello, Hai. They all centered their attention around Henry. And they loved Henry, and they look at me, and I just couldn't speak nothing. And I say, hey, they say, you sit down. And my wife would say, Henry, order me something wonderful. And Henry would get the menu, and you know, he'd say to the guy, I want the in the belly, in the belly. And my wife's, oh, Henry. And I'm sitting there. So I got mad. Not with the Italians, not with Henry. I got mad because I was frustrated, man. Nobody's paying attention to me. By the time we hit the 4th restaurant on the 4th day, I'd had it. So we walked in the restaurant, the same thing. Hey, Ottonello, Olle Bene, Ottonello, Olle Bene. And they sit down with all that. And I said to the waiter, I said, give me a menu. Because I'm going to break this down. I'm going to order something for myself. Now, I figured that I could do it because I had 4 years of Latin one. I get the menu, and it's all Italian. Now, the dudes in my brain are saying, oh, man, this stuff, we don't know nothing about it. You know, so I notice the word, this thing looks like bird. So I said, well, I better sort of take a shot at this. Can't go wrong, little bird. So the maitre d', I said, how is this? He said, oh, sir, this is the delicacy of the house. I said, bring it to me. They brought the entree, which was my bird. I had ordered barbecued sparrow. They left the head and the feet on the sparrow. The sparrow was by itself in a white plate, with the head hanging off the edge of the plate, looking like this. Feet and toenails intact, with a beak, and one eye closed and the other one open. Now, there's no way that I'm going to say out loud, I didn't order this. Everybody at my table took one look at it and immediately became very self-centered in their own meal.
Now, I am enough of a male egotist that I will sit here and eat my mistake. I don't care if I die. The problem is, how? I'm going to say this. I am proud to be an American. Because an American can eat anything on the face of this earth as long as he has two pieces of bread. I smeared mustard upon the two pieces of bread and put them two pieces of bread on top of that dude, and I started biting. When it reached my stomach, there's a valve that opens and allows the digested food to pass into the intestines. That valve saw. What was in the stomach and shut itself off. And I had the delicacy of the house in my stomach, and it just laid there and made gas. And I got bigger and bigger. And for goodness sakes, I wanted to belch, man. I wanted to call for a healthy... Now, there is a slight leak in the upper valve. And it is allowing gas about the size of the tip of my finger to come up. So it doesn't relieve anything. I'm just giving off small burps, which go, burk. These burps, when they hit the air, are the worst smelling burps you've ever smelled. People are going, oh, God, please. What? Are we near a sulfur factory or what? What is going on here? And I'm just walking around spreading these burps all over people. My wife got hold of one burp, and she said, you're dead. You passed away a long time ago, but somehow you're still upright. That's where Fernet Branca came into play. I took the shot of Fernet Branca, and the valve opened up, and the bird saw what was coming. And started running. And I started running. I owe it to Fernet Branca. I just wanted to tell you about that. I've seen snakes in the zoo, and snakes try to be mysterious. You go to the zoo to see a snake, you'll ask for your money back. Because they don't do anything, they just... Just like alligators. You go to the zoo, alligators don't do nothing. They just lay out there in the water with their eyes peeking out. Really, go to see an alligator any time of day or night. Alligators ain't doing nothing. You can hit them in the head with a peanut. Boom. I hit a couple of them with the peanut. And they walk. They just write your name down. Snakes. You'll never see a snake move. That's why nobody knows anything about them. You look at a snake, people don't even know how they move. Because people don't want to be around long enough to know how they move. Yes, a lot of people, you say, there's a snake. They say, where? Where's the snake? And they start picking their legs up like this. And what sense does that make? The snake is on the ground. You got to keep one leg on the ground. If you could keep both of them off the ground and move around, fine. You ain't gonna get nowhere just picking up one leg. Snake will get that one. Shucks, Snake is cool, man. He knows what you're doing.
Hey, look, Ma, there's a guy picking one leg up at a time. All right, well, when the left one's up, it'll come back down again. Don't worry.
But see, snakes, I turn one over, and I know how they move. Snakes have little teeny feet underneath. They do, with little sneakers on. Yeah. That's how they move so fast. Snakes don't bite to hurt you all the time. Some snakes can't talk. So that's why they bite you. They will give a soft bite, like a hello bite.
Hello?
Really? You look at a snake sometimes, you say, hello, snake, and he'll bite you on the leg.
Hello?
And he doesn't mean any harm. He's just trying to say hello. But people panic. Ah! And that's when the snake, see, after he's in there, he don't want to fall back down on his head because he doesn't have any arms. So he bites harder to hold on. If you would just relax, he wouldn't bite that hard. Let him ease down. But a lot of people just don't want to be around that long. You say snake, they start running and screaming. Snakes are cool, man. Track and field. I was a high jumper. One thing I can say about track and field is that it's the greatest sport for an exhibitionist. I mean, there's one where you totally take your clothes off, except for your shorts and your shirt, and you can parade around in front of the girls. You know, doing little things like that. You know, which has nothing to do with warming up at all. You know. And women love it, man. You watch a woman in a track and women love bodies. They love to look. Oh, look at me, kid. I never took off my sweatpants unless it was totally necessary because I have calves like you've never seen before. They call me long ankles. I ran track for the Quantico Marines. We run against Howard University. They got some of the finest chicks you've ever seen, man. And they're walking there in groups of eights and always with one ugly chick. But don't laugh. I have never hit on a good-looking chick in my life. I always take the ugly one. Because I've learned that the ugly one is always the nice one. I've seen many a guy at a party just always talking himself to death to the pretty one, yes? Oh, yes, I love Mozart. And meanwhile, I'm in See? So I do not disrespect the ugly one. So anyway, guys, we're ready to start the high jump. All right, Cosby, check in. Yeah, Davis, so. Now, they got one high jumper from Howard. This is some dude they found in the Omega Sci-Fi fraternity. I forget his name. His name is Neanderthal Man or something like that. You know, and he says, I'm reporting him to Howard High Jumper. They just sent me up because there's nobody else to jump. You know, the guy's about 5'8", so I figure I'll wipe him out right away, you know. The guy says, where'd you like to start the bar, Mr. Cosby? I said, you started at 5'5". And I keep my sweatsuit on, man. He says, first jumper, Cosby. I said, yes, thank you. And the girls are right there, man. They said, you going to jump? I said, of course. Still got my sweatsuit on now, man. And I approach the bar. Whoop! And hit, and I mean, it's beautiful. Look right down on the bar and kick. Man in the pit. Come on out of the pit, you know, so cool. This, and pretending like it really wasn't a good jump, you know. And the girls are saying, oh, look at his face. He probably didn't like that one. He could probably go higher than that, huh? So, guys, it's a Neanderthal. This dude is back about 30 feet in this position, looking like a samurai warrior. And he says, oh! Takes off. His last step was 20 feet from the bar. He cleared the bar by 30 feet in this position. Missed the pick all the way. Landed on the
the track, knocked over his own man running the 220, cleaned him out. So he says, Neanderthal made it. Where do you want to put the bar now, Miss Cottery? I should put it at 6-1. Now comes to the stripping down. And I take it to my knees. Don't want to show them my calves yet. Mr. Cosby, ready? Now I take off my sweatsuit. And the crowd says, oh. Isn't that amazing that he can stand up with those things? I get back, man. And the dudes back here are saying, like, we ain't gonna make this. I think you're aware of that, ain't you? No, we're gonna try for the girls.
And everybody in my brain is like, kick, kick, kick now, kick now. I say, yes, I must kick. I've never been up this high before. I wanted to live with it for a while. No, but kick, and I kick. Land in the pit, made it. 6-1, get up as cool as you've ever seen. Meanwhile, my brain is going, what? So cool, man. Now this cat says, Neanderthal. You can't see this cat. You see this ball of dust growing. And he's coming. And 20 feet away, he fell. Dead. And I won.
We were discussing children.
My wife,
she says, you know, little girls are easier to toilet train than little boys. So I said, now that to me is a female chauvinistic pig remark. Because I don't remember wearing a diaper when I was a child. I have a 3-year-old son who says, what mommy says is true. I remember when my daughters were 18 months old, they didn't like it. When they had to go, they said, ooh, ooh, they come right in the room. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And you know, and parents, oh God, there, hey, ho. Pick it up. Throw it right in the toilet bowl. Head first, we don't care as long as she's in there. A son of mine is 3 years old. He ain't said nothing yet, man. Just walks around the house dragging that duck he's got. Just as happy, 300 flies following him everywhere he goes. And he's just happy and smiling, just walking. And you never know nothing till he passes by you, you know. Come here, son. You got a load?
Yeah, but it's in the diaper.
Brother Russell, he thought he was smart, but Russell was really dumb because he started laughing at my father one time at the dinner table, and Russ didn't know how tough Dad really was. He was just sitting there giggling at my father.
Dad looked funny, don't he?
See, well, Russell hadn't been with us too long, so I said, Russ, don't laugh at Dad because Dad will pick up a tree and kill you. So I said, I can't help it, man. He just looked funny to Russell. So you better cut it out. And Russ started laughing. And my father said, what the hell's wrong with Russell? And then,
you got a funny looking face.
Dad, do you think my face is funny? You keep laughing at me. I'll smack your face off. And Russ looked at him.
You smack my face off.
And Dad reached across and smacked Russell and knocked his face off. I'm not lying. His head was still on his shoulders, but his lips and eyes fell right on the floor, and his lips was moving. And his face was making no noise, just the head was going, oh, 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 oh.
And I said, see, Russ, I told you. And he was feeling all around. He really got scared. And my mother felt sorry for him and reached down, picked his lips and eyes up, washed them off, and put them back on him. When I was a kid, I hated to take a bath because I had to clean out the ring around the bathtub, which is a drag to me because you're all clean. Now you got to get the cleanser and bend over and clean out the tub. So I got the brilliant idea, why not bathe in the toilet bowl? Now think about that. Bathe in the toilet bowl. That way there's no ring. You wash something, you... And you wash and... Now, the problem with bathing in the toilet bowl is that the water is cold. That's where Russell comes in. I used to put Russell in the toilet bowl to heat up the water. And he used to sit in there, he just... And of course, when you see your brother in the toilet bowl, there's a little thing that says, I wonder where he would go. If I just... If it hadn't been for his head... Now, you see masculinity at its finest. The husband talking to the bathroom door. I said, come out of the bathroom, didn't I, hon? Sure, come out of the bathroom. I'm not fooling. I bought this house, and I kicked the bathroom door in. Now, you come out here and talk to me man to man. Come on out. Children out here worried about you. Go on back to bed, kids. Your mother's gone crazy. Go on, get in the bed. She'll probably be committed. You won't see her anymore. But I'll be in charge, and you get a lot of candy. Hey, sweets. You coming out? Okay, I'll be waiting for you. Then he puts on his pajamas so he can let her know that he's really angry. Yeah, when she sees these on, she'll know that there's no action tonight. That'll fix her. And you lay up in the bed waiting for your wife to come out. Gee, when is it? 12 o'clock? 12 o'clock. Shouldn't be arguing at 12 o'clock. 12 o'clock's not a time for arguing. 12 o'clock's time for love. Come on out of that bathroom, you devil! Oh! She's coming out all right. But if you've been married long enough, you know how she's coming out. Razor blades in her curlers. Sulfur grease dripping off of her face, a burlap nightgown, and barbed wire around the vital parts. And she's coming out. Now she grabs all the covers, puts them over her head, and gives you this position here. This is all you're going to get for the rest of your life. Keep this thing in my face all night. But that's all right, though, see, because I've been married long enough. No problem there. I just go to Plan 7. Attack at 4 a.m. when she's in the twilight zone. Oh, who is this? The shadow. That's why the female is so great, because she's tender. She's got class. You know what I mean?
I mean, like husbands wait for their wives like this, standing up in the bed.
Oh!
But there's nothing so tender as the wife coming out of the bathroom when she sees him up in that bed.
Not tonight. No. Sit down. Not tonight. Mm-mm. No, no. $2 don't give you all of this. Put some ice on yourself. Not tonight.
But why should it take so long for people to get to be groovy? Like, somebody should really help us in the beginning when we first get married. I mean, those 2 years where you try to impress each other that you're not really human beings. That's ridiculous, trying to hide your odors from each other. Like, in the first year of my marriage, I would sneak out of the bed and go brush my teeth. Brush, and come back and then talk to her. Hi. Trying to let her know that my breath never smelled overnight. And she'd look at me after I'd say hi. She'd say, And then she'd go, brush, and come back. And then we talked to each other for 2 hours, proving each other that our breath never smelled overnight. Then after you're married 8-10 years, you just roll right over and talk in her nose. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
You gonna brush?
No, today's Saturday. Hell, I almost killed myself the first 2 years I was married trying to prove to my wife I didn't have gas. Like this.
Oh God, don't let it happen here.
The only thing that saved me was one night after I'd had a heavy bowl of lima beans. I will never forget. I had a gas ball that had eaten up half of my leg. And I knew it was either do something about it or die. And I said, I'm not gonna die. She'll have to know sooner or later. And Camille went over and closed the window, did something, and I just... And I'll never forget the look on her face when she came back to that bed. Is the dog in here? I'm going to tell you a story. It is a true story. My wife said to me,
when are you going to tell your daughters about sex? Eric is 5, Aaron's 4. So I said, well, I'll just probably explain it to them in such and such a way, and I'll say this is this, and that's the that, and that'll be the end of it. My wife said, well, that's very good. I said, okay. And we forgot it.
2 weeks later, I'm in my shower, in my bathroom. I come out of the shower and I'm drying myself. And my room is full. And so I go over to my bowl to do God's work. And I'm standing there in my bathroom doing God's work. And the door to my bathroom opened up, and there stood Erica and Aaron. And they start to walk in. And they say, oh, Daddy! Now, I can't cut off the work or I'll hurt myself, you see. So I'm saying, get out of here! You ain't about to see this now. Get on out of here. And they keep walking. Yeah, yeah. You got a wally, wally. And I said, I'm not playing. Now get out of here. And they said, we gonna get a wally, wally too. No, you're not getting nothing. Now get out of here. And they leave. Now, I am totally embarrassed because I'm not ready to explain this to them. But I know now that I have to explain this to them
because little 5 and 4 year olds, and they go to school, love to make up songs about things. School is to sing about it, because here comes the teacher with the police.
Mr. Cosby, could you come along with us, please?
What for?
For showing your kids your Wally Wally.
So, I've got to explain this to my daughter and do it right.
So I go looking for my kids.
They were, I swear to you, in their bathroom. Not one stitch of clothing on, facing their bowl, both of them. And one said,
"Push harder so your Wally Wally will come out."
Just standing there and not hitting nothing, not even coming close to the bowl. Water all over the floor. And I said, "Cut it out." My wife comes in and says, "What are you teaching the children?"
I borrowed my father's car, and after about the 6th week, he came into the living room. And I knew from the look on his face I was in trouble. And he said, "Come here."
"Who, me?" "No, the table." "You seen me come in this living room and do like this. And you've seen the table get up and walk over here. Yes, I'm talking to you, egghead. Get outside, I want to talk to you." So I go outside, man, and I'm just shaking. I'm shaking because I know he's going to hit me sooner or later. You know? My father can time his hits, man, just to the point when I relax. Took me out to the car, and he pointed at it. He said, "Now, what is that?" I knew the answer was car, but I didn't know what he wanted, man. So I said, "It's a car." "Are you sure of it?"
"Yeah."
"Well, say it like you sure of it, then."
"Say, car." "Car."
"Good. Now,
what is that?" "That's the engine."
"That's two you got right.
Now, how does the engine start up?" "Well, you turn the key and you step on the gas."
"On the what?"
"You step on the gas." "You do know about gas?"
"Now, what is this?"
"That's the gas cap, Dad."
"You know how to get it off?"
"Yeah, Dad, you just unscrew it like that, see?"
"Yeah, now give me the gas cap. Now, I'm taking your head, and I'm putting it inside the gas tank. Now take a deep breath and tell me what you smell."
"I don't smell nothing, Dad."
"Right, because there ain't no gas in the car."
"Now what I want to know is, last night you had the car, didn't you?"
"Yes, Dad."
"You damn right you had it. How did you get this car in this spot? Ain't no gas in the car. Ain't no fumes in it or nothing. How do you get this car to walk into this spot and ain't no fumes or nothing in it? I got in the car, turned the key, and the needle fell outside." "But, Dad, don't butt me. I'll knock you out. I brought you in this world. I'll take you out, Junior." "Now, the only thing that makes me mad, Junior, is this. You must think I'm the dumbest father
on the face of this earth. Now tell me the truth, don't you?
No, Dad, don't lie to me, Junior. Tell me the truth. I'm your father. Say to me, Dad, you are the dumbest man I've ever seen in my life. Tell me that. No, Dad, don't cry. Because your mother ain't coming. Now, some boys borrow their father's car, Junior, and leave just enough gas in it so that the father can start the car and run out of gas starting it up. Now, that's how dumb some boys think their fathers are. You think I'm so dumb that I'm going to get in this car, close the door, and say, oh, my goodness, I ran out of gas, closing the door. Now, here's 75 cents. You go down to the gas station, it's an 8-block walk, and walk all of it. And I hope your legs hurt. You get a 50-cent worth of gas, give the man 25-cent deposit on the can. You come back here, you put gas in the tank, then you put some in the carburetor, then you get in front of the car because I'm going to run over you.
My wife is from the South. I'm from Pennsylvania. I don't eat no chitlins. My mother loves chitlins. You say, somebody is cooking chitlins. She would get in the car and drive, man. She knows, she says, hi, you having chitlins? I'll be right in here. Let's sit down. I can't eat them, man. First time she ever brought them to me, I looked at them. I said, what is this? They're all in the plate like that. I said, what is that? She said, chitlins. I said, what? She said, chitlins. I said, I don't want none. She said, eat it, you'll like it. I said, I don't want none. What is chitlins? She said, well, it's the intestines of the pig. I said, no, I don't want none of that. No, because if I know anything about anatomy, you know, you got the lower track in there, ain't you? There ain't no food down in that area. As a matter of fact, I think you better check it out. Somebody misspelled a word. But you got the same thing in Greece. I went to Greece and some people gave me a plate of tripe. I said, what is this? This is the stomach of the sheep. Uh-uh, you take that away too. I don't want nothing where the food ain't finished. I don't want it where it ain't finished and where it is finished. Leave them areas alone. But you got something else? And then people call things sweetbreads. Have some sweetbread. Are you crazy? Guy brought me a plate of them rolling all around on the plate. I said, what is that? Oh, you're kidding. I'm putting them things in my mouth, man. Got nothing better to eat. Give me a pancake. And I can't eat no brains. Brains and eggs. Blech. I can't bite on nothing somebody's been thinking with. Thing that you owe your wife is some attention. If you're going to go gamble, take her with you. Because my wife is not with me. I went to get a newspaper last night. Cost me $1,700. And I don't see how you guys can think that your wives bring bad luck. I mean, how's your wife going to make the dice jump up 7? You guys are silly. And she's not giving you bad luck at the blackjack table. Instead of arguing with her, why don't you punch out that dealer? That's the guy that's socking it to you. Well, ain't nothing worse looking than the wife wandering around there at the slot machines. And you know they don't belong there. You guys just, oh, well, here, it's $40. Why don't you go on over there and play the slot machines? And they're just walking around. You can tell them all. They got the shoes in their hand, just wandering around with a little cup of nickels in their hand. Don't send them over there.
There's only three old ladies who play those slots seriously. All the rest of them, somebody's wife wandering around waiting for them to come and get them.
No, you guys don't know no better. You're just dumb, that's all. There's a difference between taking your wife for ice cream and taking your wife someplace special. You say to her, look, you want to go get some ice cream? Yeah. She comes out, she gets in the car herself. You get in the car, and you... That's fine. That's going to get ice cream. But you're going someplace special, then you have to treat her special because she's all dressed up. You say to your wife, I'm going to take you to Las Vegas. She says, what? Oh, my goodness. I've got to get new hair. I've got to get shoes. I've got to get a dress. She wants to be ready. Well, sure, she stays in the bathroom maybe 18 hours, but she's getting ready. So when she comes out, she looks like a little queen. And, of course, when she comes around the car, she's going to do like this. But the husband, he don't know no different or nothing. First of all, he didn't even bathe. That's why there's nothing different. He just hit himself with a little band under the arm, wrote an IOU to his body, and he comes out to the car and gets right in it. So, wait a minute, where are you? Come on, get in the car. Hey, I'm talking to you. You going with me? Well, get in the car. Come around and do what? Now you come around, she's already upset because you didn't want to open the door. Now you're still running your mouth. Go on, get in the car. Now she's really peeved. And to show you how important she is, she locks your door. Open the door! I said open the door! Take the lock off the door! What? I love you! I love you more than anything in the world. Now open the door or I'll kill your children. Now both of you are peeved and you haven't even gotten out of the garage. And you should never make your wife angry when she's in the car with you. Because if she's angry, you have one of the most dangerous human beings in the world. And they ain't gonna look at you and they ain't gonna talk to you. And they hope that you have an accident. If you were lighting a cigarette and didn't see a truck coming to hit you head on at 800 miles an hour, they wouldn't tell you the truck was coming. Why didn't you tell me the truck was coming? You're so smart, you know everything. I got it all figured out, how we can win here. What we do is there's about 1,400 of us here. They think we're in here watching the show. They wouldn't be ready for us. All we'd have to do, man, is just get up and march on that casino. I mean, march on it. Taking chips as we go. I mean, taking them. Not fooling around, walking right up in groups of 20 to 30, just taking chips. They put 12 security guards out there. We could do it. Are you ready? Yeah. All right. Now we're going to go out there. Now some of us are going to die. Now you're backing off now, huh? I'm in charge, and I'll be behind you. That way, so when we turn around and run, I'll be in front. And there's one other thing. When we divvy up the chips, here's the way we're going to do it. Whatever color the person, that's the color chips he's going to get. No fair painting yourself. It's terrible out there. I'll kill them, and they know it, if they ever change it to 23. I own this whole strip. They ever change it, and they won't do it, because they know me. I'm rough on 23. I stopped playing blackjack, though. It's dealers. Just I mean, it's not the guy. It's just the way the cards fall, you know? They give themselves their cards too fast. You can't wish on them. You know, pop, 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 pop. Wait a minute. Let me wish something on you. Now, if you could go slow like we can.
5 and 8.
I need a 7 or an 8.
May I have a 7? 10.
What the hell's wrong with you? I asked you for a 7 or an 8. You give me a 10. Now take it back. I sat at the table and the guy ran off, I swear, 11 hands straight. And this lady and I were sitting at the table, and finally we just said, look, don't give us any more cards. You just call out what you have. We'll throw you the money. Worst gambler I ever saw at the blackjack table was a man. Believe it or not, we had a table full of people, and this guy split 5s. And the whole table got up and beat him up. I know one time I was down to my last $200. I mean, not to my name, but I'd lost all I could sign for. And I said, I'm going to win something. I went over to the roulette wheel and got $200 worth of quarter chips. Covered that table. I mean, covered the table. Red and black. Even up. I'm going to win something before I go to sleep. And the guy spun the ball and it fell on the floor. That was where I was Saturday afternoon, standing in front of the theater, waiting to get in to the movie. What we used to go through, we used to sell these old papers, what we call old papers, to the junk man. And you go around, everybody's out, say, man, do you have any old papers? So the guy give you the old papers, and you put them in your wagon, and you take your wagon on down to this place called a junk shop. So we'd take them and put the papers on the scale, and it would weigh like 12 pounds or something like that. Now, to make added weight and to get extra money, if you're really smart, you would put rocks in the middle of the papers, you see. And when you put them on the scale, they weighed maybe 14 pounds instead of 12. And you had to help him pick them up when you had the rocks in the middle, or else he'd see the rocks. He didn't want to pay a penny a pound for rocks. And so you throw them in and you get away with maybe 2 more cents for all them rocks. Only kid ever got caught at that was this kid in my neighborhood, Dumb Donald. Because Donald used to put the rocks on top of the paper. Donald wasn't too bright. He always wondered why he was broke. But we used to dig certain cowboys like Lash LaRue, the Durango kid. He was cool because he had his guns in backwards. And it was a lot of them. But the grooviest of all of them was Buck Jones. Coolest thing about Buck was that he was one of us. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, didn't kiss no women. Just kissed his horse. That's all he did. So we used to go to a movie and sit in the same place all the time and wait for Buck Jones. And the other coolest thing about Buck was that he kept chewing gum in his pocket. And whenever he got angry and he was getting ready to hit you, he'd reach in his pocket and get his gum, ball it up and start chewing him. And that's when we went crazy. Because we knew he was going to beat somebody up. But the crook never knew that Buck was getting ready to beat him up. So the crook just kept talking, I'm going to beat you in the face, I'm going to hit you in the mouth. And Buck just be chewing that gum. Next thing you know, it was really great because you could really talk to Buck and he would hear you. Buck went in the saloon, kicked the doors open, just walked right in with his white suit and his hat on. His hat never came off in a fight. That's another cool thing about it. Oh, one time they threw Buck out the 3rd-story window. He landed on the ground. Hat was still on, Jack. We all said, go ahead, Buck. That was really cool, man. Buck still got the hat on. I mean, riding or anything, you could go up to Buck and yank his hat off, and it would still stay on his head. That's how cool he was. Never lost his hat. And a lot of people said he didn't have no top to his head. That's why he sewed it right onto his ears and his whole skull and brain and everything. But Buck was cool. And he'd walk into the bar and didn't nobody know that Buck was the star of the picture. And that's another disadvantage that the crooks have. They never know who the star of the picture. They just pick on anybody. And so Buck came in and he said to the bartender,
I'll have a glass of milk, please.
And the crook said,
what?
And everybody in the movie said, uh-oh, Buck gonna start chewing some gum, man. Because we always want him to chew the gum early, but Buck was cool. He always waited for the right minute before he chewed it. And so the crook went over and got some red eye. Well, that's the booze that make you drink and fall down and make you fight and lose. So he went over to Buck. I said, have a shot of red eye. You don't be asking for no milk around here. So Buck said,
I don't drink.
And that's when we said, oh, man, that is so cool, man. Buck said to the cat, he don't drink. So the guy said, if you don't want to drink it, you'll wear it. And poured red eye on Buck's clothes. And everybody in the movie said, uh-oh, the guy poured red eye on Buck's clothes. And old Weird Al said, hey, Buck, he just poured some red eye on your clothes. And you know what Buck said? He looked at the crook and said,
you just poured red eye on my clothes.
And the movie went, oh, that was cool, man. And the guy said, I'll pour a whole bottle on your clothes. And dumped the bottle on his clothes. And Buck stood there, and Harold said, hey, Buck, he's pouring the bottle red eye on your clothes. And Buck said,
you're pouring the whole bottle on my clothes.
And went for his gum. And that's when the movie went crazy. Some kids even passed out. Oh, man. Everybody just fell out their chairs. And Buck started chewing that gum and tore that guy up. And we went out of that theater. We were so happy. And as a result of that, every kid in my neighborhood carried gum in his top pocket. And you could say something about his mother. Your mother ain't no good. He'd go right for the gum. And that's when I'd hit him.
Was thinking about when we got married, but I know she was upset the first time she found out she was irked. Because I was just sitting there eating a bowl of cornflakes. And the morning she found out, she came downstairs looking at me. It's hard to eat your cornflakes with somebody circling your table like a shark. And I said, what's the matter with you?
You did this to me!
You're darn right I did. What'd you expect, a bag of jelly beans? And then she's all the time jumping, feel the baby, feel the baby, feel the baby. And the kid ain't moving. Those babies got sense. They can hear. They do all that stuff. And then as soon as he hears, feel the baby. And you put your hand on him, and you can stay there for 3 weeks. He ain't moving. He knows you're there. Finally it happened. 3 o'clock in the morning. My wife woke me up, hit me on the side. And I sat straight up. I said, no, I will not get married if you die. Then she made a yell like I've never heard before. Whoa! Legs shot straight out, you know. And I said, what's the matter? She said, I'm having a baby. A what? She said, whoa! I ran around the bed for 20 minutes. That's all I did. Just kept circling the bed. How you doing now?
Whoa!
I ran down and kissed the car because I knew the car loved me. I tried to drive the car right into the living room. It wouldn't fit. I'm panicking. I run upstairs. I look for her. She's not in the bedroom. That's when I almost pass out because the whole 9 months, Camille's had a bad cough, and I figure at this point, that's all she needs to do is...
Oh, my goodness. Hello, doctor? Yes, well, the whole kit fell right out. Now, what do you keep and what do you throw away?
She's in the bathroom, standing up there, looking in the mirror, putting on
her eyelashes.
Whoa! And the lashes all on her neck and everything. Meanwhile, the kid is hollering, "Hello, are you ready for me or what?" She turns around, "You did this to me!" "Yes, we're going to get it fixed right now, dear. Just..." Now I get it down to the car, and I'm driving with the back seat door open and everything going 800 miles an hour. Pull into the maternity ward. My wife goes, "Whoa!" I jump right on the hood. Dancing on the hood. Out come these three idiots from the maternity ward dressed in white, and this guy says, "What seems to be your problem?" I said, "Just give me some gas. I'll get the baby delivered over at the gas station." They bring out a wheelchair, and they put my wife in the wheelchair, towels all between her legs and everything, and she's going, "Whoa!" And I'm walking behind her, you know, and the nurse is walking behind me saying, "How are you going to pay for this?" Now, I come up to these two doors, and the guy says, "You wait here," and they take my wife in. You know, I said, "Wait a minute, I want to see my kid come out of the chute."
"You can't say nothing, you just stay here."
Now, oddly enough, the waiting room is next door to the labor room. And do you know, they sing in there. No, really, I heard the ladies in there, "Oh, Jesus, kill me now. Oh, God, kill me now." And my wife is leading the singers.
"I'd kill you for this, Bill."
Now the guy comes in with the Pat Boone shoes on.
"Is there a Mr. Cosby here?"
"Yes,
"Your wife would like to see you."
I walk out, and first thing I see is my child, my firstborn. And there's Camille on the gurney. So high, both eyes are in the same socket. Gonna pump it up again, too, dear.
This is basketball. I played for the Wissahickon Boys Club. Wissahickon Boys Club, just outside Germantown, close to Nicetown in Philadelphia. You can't whip us in our own gym. I mean, that includes the fight and everything else after the game. The Wissahickon Boys Club has a record of whatever and zero. We have never lost a game. Has nothing to do with the referees. Has to do with the gym itself. First time I ever played against Wilt Chamberlain, he was in high school, played for Overbrook. I was playing for Germantown. He was great then, you could see it. I dribbled down court and shot. He jumped up in the air and grabbed the ball in flight and ate it. Then he ran down court and jumped through the hoop. Nobody could whip us. I tell you why. First of all, when you enter the Wissahickon Boys Club gymnasium, you have to come in through the door. See? And as soon as you open the door, you're in the gym. Now you gotta close the door. The whole gym is nothing but four walls with a steam pipe 5 feet high running around the whole gym. Anybody going up for a rebound gets that water pipe. So for at least two quarters, we're working on Wilt against that water pipe. See? So when somebody shoots, he looks for the water pipe. Then he tries to jump. By that time, we got the rebound and go. Now, the gym floor, there are loose boards all over, which we, the home team, only know where they is. So when a guy is dribbling, we just force him into that little area. And you see a cat on the fast break pumping, and there's no ball or nothing like that, you see? And we've picked the ball up and gone in for 2 points. The next thing is this. The rim comes out from the wall, you see. So when you drive, we don't let you know where you are. Sometimes we let you go. And you go against the wall and the steam pipe, you see. Now you are a little bit leery of driving in anymore because you got the steam pipe or whatever. Now the next thing is the fact that the ceiling in the gymnasium is only 13 feet high. So whatever you thought about arching your shots, you can forget about it. It's clothesline time from here on. Take a team at least 4 quarters to learn how to shoot in that place. And if you are really that good, the lights go out when you have the ball. We have never lost a game in that gymnasium.
You all are familiar with Fat Albert. And Fat Albert was that kid in the neighborhood who knew how to take anything apart.
Boom. Fat Albert had a car.
In 1958, Fat Albert's father gave him the hull of a 41 Mercury. When Fat Albert was 19, Fat Albert had saved enough money to buy a new engine for the 41 Merc. And he went down to the graveyard, you know where they have these old cars. And he bought a Cessna airplane engine. Albert's car had a sound of its own. I'll never forget the day he started it up. He said,
here it is.
And we all got in it, man. And he started it up.
And everybody said, ain't that cool, man?
I'm telling you, we freaked out on that, Jack. I love that car, man. We got more girls with that car because girls love the sound of... They love that. And especially ours. Man, that was the toughest car in the world. You pull up to a bus stop. And some girls say, I want to ride. I took my driver's test in Fat Albert's car. Oh, yeah. At 16 years old. So I'm sitting in the car, in Albert's car, you know, with the Cessna airplane engine. Waiting for the state trooper. Pennsylvania state troopers are all 6'4". Big hat, sunglasses, leather legs.
My name is Woodard. I'm a state trooper. I'm sure you're familiar with the Pennsylvania Vehicle Driving Motor Responsive Rules and Regulations. I was very excited.
Yes.
All right, you will start the car up and follow my directions. This thing's got a clutch on it. I hate the clutch, man. So now, easy on the clutch and easy on the gas, and you come out slowly, let up off of the clutch and down on the gas and move out. Okay, let's go.
I I think you flooded it.
How come?
Well, there's gas shooting over your left shoulder.
No, it always does that.
And that trooper's sitting in the car.
What is this, an airplane engine?
Yeah.
Well, how do you keep the engine cool? Well, you just have to keep moving. All right. Start it up. Pull up.
Now, I want to clutch in the thing. And I didn't do it right, man. I panicked. And the car went...
Lost his hat, his glasses. Finally reached over and turned the key. Here, you pass, you pass.
That Elvis got a heck of a car, Jack.